are listening to Commerce Talk with Smart OSC. Hello and welcome to Commerce Talk with Smart OSC. I'm your host, Adrian Wakeham, the Regional Manager for Australia and New Zealand at Smart OSC. Thank you very much for joining us for this, the second episode of our podcast. And we've got a real treat on for you today. Our guest is Eddie Tang, the Head of Marketing and the Digital Business Manager at ASOS Singapore. Welcome to Commerce Talk, Eddie. Please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, happy to. Okay. Thanks, Adrian, for the introduction. I'm Eddie. So basically what I do on a day-to-day, I head the entire marketing business for ASOS Singapore. And of course, as my title entails, Digital Business Manager. So basically, I'm responsible to sell more for the business in digital sense through improved digital experience. So basically that sums up what I do and who am I? And of course, very, very happy to be part of this podcast. Thanks for the invite, Adrian.
Our absolute pleasure, Eddie. Thank you very much. Now, so today we're going to be talking about blurred lines. No, not the controversial Pharrell Williams song, but the blurred lines between B2B, business to business, and B2C, business to consumer commerce, which is where a business is rolling out a business to business to consumer model, or for less of a mouthful, B2B2C. Now, Eddie and ASOS recently revamped their B2B2C offering. And in the interest of full disclosure, I should say, with a little help from Smart OSC, so we thought who better is able to come on and talk about what sort of impact that has had on a business. Now, by the blurring of lines, we mean phenomena like the fact that a lot of business buyers are increasingly looking to get that same online experience that they would get as a consumer. Now, we've also seen some stunning research from McKinsey that's indicated 70 to 80% of B2B decision makers prefer remote human interactions or digital self-service when it comes to interacting with the sales reps. An extension of that is, I think there was a similar one that I've seen. It's like 2/3 of the buying process has occurred before they actually even talk to a salesperson. So essentially what we're driving at is how the B2B2C business model is changing how businesses deal with those two customer segments. So to get started on how and why B2B2C is blurring the lines, Eddie, what sort of experience do you look for yourself, when you're buying consumer goods?
One thing I do look out for is the personalization in the shopping experience. Because to me, I would pay the extra to have that special service that personalized service that I could get from a retailer or brand or a store. Majority of my purchases right now, I would say half of them actually come from impulse purchase, especially online. When you're browsing through your phones, your computers, and you're looking at different stores and stuff. So like I say, a majority of my purchases are actually out of impulse. And out of those impulse purchases are actually due to recommendations and suggestions from the retailers itself that got me thinking, hey, I think I would need this. So probably I'll just check it out. And yeah, and the truth be told, it's like that. So the personalization, what I was referring to is the suggestions and recommendations that retailers, based on your browsing or shopping behavior previously or the interactions with them, be able to recommend those suggestions and recommendations to you in terms of the products. So one of the big retailers that I usually frequent is Amazon. So as you know, Amazon, I shop at Amazon US, and the Amazon US usually have a great tons of offerings, but sometimes not all of the items are, I would say, all the products are the cheapest. So, but it's because of this personalization messaging or communication that they have to me based on like what I said through my interactions with them, it gives me the impulse to actually buy all this stuff. But of course, if you're talking about staple stuff, like even like groceries and stuff, in Singapore, we do have the Amazon, previously also known as Prime. So so I've been using that itself. But one thing that got me back to that, always back to them, is also the ecosystem that they have built up. Because I'm those kind of person that I don't, if I'm comfortable with something and I'm very happy with the service or experience that I'm getting from a particular brand, a store, I'll tend to go back to them. So I would say the other important factor is actually the customer experience or the customer kind of customer support that you can get from particularly from that. So quoting Amazon, for example, we know that Amazon has excellent customers service in terms of, well, if you are not happy with your purchase or if there's any something wrong, it's usually a no question asked kind of things that they will just take. No worries, take this $10 vouchers, I'll refund you this and enjoy this additional $10 vouchers for next purchase. So these are the two things that I usually look for when I'm shopping with brands or even stores itself, and got me going back again and again.
And I guess is because we're obviously talking both business to business and business to consumer here. I mean, with your own experience on the B2B buying side, is the experience that you're looking for any different in terms of how you want to be treated?
B2B is definitely different. It's definitely minus the impulse, because I definitely need to go through different stakeholders and management to actually get approval for that purchase. But you're right, on a day-to-day level, we do a lot with B2B buying method. So that is actually something that I can clearly relate to. But and you're right. And right now, my expectation of B2B transactions is that I would also want that similar experience that I have when shopping with B2C platforms. So from just now, I mentioned about personalizations and stuff, about the customer support, that is also very important in to me in B2B transactions. Because as we know, majority of the B2B transactions right now that's happening now is very personal. Meaning to say, we have someone from the vendor or an agency selling us a product, and when we buy that product, we need to converse through multiple emails or through calls or even text messaging to get the things that we want. But and sometimes at the end of the day, it's just probably like down to a few items of it. So what I'm trying to say is that the experience, I believe B2C experience definitely can be brought into the B2B portion where everything is automated, because being a digital person, I'm a pro automation kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And I want all things simplified. So that's why even the buying process, even down to buying B2B stuff. So yeah, that is something that I'm definitely looking into.
So obviously we've seen article after article indicating that the pandemic globally has been what's really been spurring B2B buyers to seek out this more of a B2C experience. For ASOS Singapore, we know that this B2B2C transformation actually predates COVID. Mm-hmm. So other than what was brought on through the pandemic, I mean, what was changing in the market, particularly for ASOS's buyers, to bring that shift on?
Very good question. So back then, when we were actually starting out doing this, we have one key thing that we want to address itself, which is actually to improve the digital experience of not just the B2C customers, but all of our customers in general. And the second thing is like what I mentioned previously about automations. We want to automate the process. So to give you more insights about the B2B2C, sorry, it's a mouthful. The
B2B2C. It is.
So to give you more insights about the B2B2C business that we are driving at, is actually we term it the ASUS Partnership Employee Purchase, ASUS Partner Employee Purchase Program. So basically what it means is that customers can, companies, employees can come to our ASUS online store to check out items and at a discounted price or a customized pricing specifically for the company. So for example, like SmartOSC is part of the program. Any SmartOSC customers with the domain smartoc.com can just simply register for an account, and they can enjoy that customer price, the customized pricing or the special pricing that ASUS extends to SmartOSC. So this is the whole idea of the employee purchase program. So back then, we wanted to first of all, automate this entire process, because previously, before we have this thing in place, our sales rep has to go to different companies one by one and to drop them that the we call it order forms and stuff. So basically to gather orders from the employees, and it only can be done like due to time resources and also manpower. It can only be done like once in a quarter or even once half a year. So that's the challenge back then. So with the mindset of automating it and providing a better digital experience in this entire process, we came up with this employee purchase program that I mentioned. And like it names and tell, it's basically part of the B2B2C way of selling to them. So which is the two things that actually spurs us in doing this is back then to pre-COVID is like I mentioned, wanted to improve the customer shopping experience and also to automate the entire process so that we don't have to rely not just on sales rep, freeing up their time to do more important things and have all these placing of orders automatically done through our online store as part of one single system itself. So yeah, so this is actually the reason why we actually started out doing this like 3 years ago.
What would you say are some of the most important first steps when a business is looking about replicating a B2C experience for their B2B buyers?
First of all, identify whether that business process can be translated into a digital matter or way. So because translating B2C experience for B2B buyers is a tricky thing, because some of B2B purchases, even regardless of the time of the day and age we are in, some of them is still you definitely require some form of human interactions within them. So I wouldn't say that all such B2C experience can be extended to B2B for all kinds of transactions. So that's why the very first step I mentioned is to first of all identify whether these transactions can be replicated in a sense that and does it match the B2C way of shopping or purchasing an item. So again, I would say this is the very, very first step in thinking about that. Then when moving downwards, the thing is trying to identify all the business processes or that entails, and whether if we can have system processes replicating those, supporting those business processes that I just mentioned, then that basically will forms up whether a business is suitable or capable of replicating the B2C experience to B2B buyers itself. And lastly, not forgetting the nature of a product. For our instances, consumer requires a laptop, desktop, even mobile phones. And that applies the same to the businesses itself. So again, three things. So these are three things that I would say that you should look at when you're designing this. So continuing from just now what I mentioned about the program that we're offering, the employee purchase program. So you know, the B2C shopping experience, especially for shopping for a laptop, it's either you go to a brand.com or you go to a retailer to look at all the different offerings that they have and basically put it into the cart and check out. So same goes for B2B customers, because when people are, especially B2B customers, when they're purchasing a laptop or even a PC device, what they looked at is basically what the customers or the B2C customers are actually looking at. So down from the specifications, the models, to the pricing, these are a few things that the B2B customers will look at. So for our instances, basically we just marry the B2B buying behavior with the B2C buying behavior into this one single system that we can support both sides. Because like I mentioned, the shopping process or the considerations are about the same for these two types of customers. That being so, using that one single system, we're able to support whether if it's the B2C or the B2B side. But what's better for the B2B, like I mentioned, for our ACES instances, is that we are recognizing, we are providing the B2B customers the ease. Because like I mentioned, in order to enjoy the customer's pricing, the company has to first sign up for the program and to be approved and enrolled in the program. So subsequently, whether the rest of the employees can, like the example that I put previously, they can just simply log in with the password and check out, log in with their own company email and simply check out an item they desire to buy. So this is how actually we did it on our end.
Okay, yeah. Because I guess as well, it's sort of when you're going about personalizing that buying experience for a B2B buyer, and you know, and even when we look at, you know, certainly like your main site, and certainly the business to consumer side is, you know, it's very gaming focused. Like that is a key segment that ASOS is really, really strong in. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, whereas the business side, again, it's obviously a lot more clean and corporate in terms of the look, and you're looking at obviously, you know, it's laptops for work and educational mm-hmm. purposes. So is that, you know, and you mentioned before that once you're actually in the site, the experience is pretty much the same for both mm-hmm. of them. But I guess specifically, do you personalize that buying experience if for someone who's part of that, you know, in terms of someone who's part of the program, and then how they're logged on with their company email, or does it personalize on their personal history or on what the company's personal history might have been?
To us or to ASOS itself, the buyer experience don't just start the moment when they actually land onto our website and clicking on the products they like and buying the product, paying for it and stuff. It actually entails all the way back to how ASOS does the communications to them, which is why with this thought, the personalization actually starts with the very initial communication, or down to the point where it's a simple product launch telling that, hey, Adrian, we recently launched this sparkling awesome product and we want you to know. So it just starts from that point. So the personalizations that we did is the communications on this matter. So yes, we do personalize the buying experience for B2B, B2C, or B2B2C customers itself. And this communication boils down to the topic and the agenda of how we are actually communicating to them. So yes, we do, like all other brands, we do communicate them on promotional level, like, hey, there's a 10% discount going on, you should get it. But we go beyond that. It's actually to give them more insights to what products are suitable for them.
And look, I guess something else that always comes up when, you know, and this is going back to potentially giving some advice to businesses out there who might be about to start this journey, is some of the things that you obviously need to deal with internally. You know, there's always change management issues, and there's channel conflict as well, especially when you're talking B2B.
Yeah.
How did you go about changing both the company and even to a certain extent, some of your own internal team's mindsets when it came to say, okay, we need to now, we're going down this path of providing our B2B customers this B2C type experience?
This is a ever arising topic and for not just for myself, but for the entire company particularly. So as you know, changing someone's mindset and even the company's mindset, it's a tough thing to do. And you're very right that there's a lot of reasons behind this, like due to channel conflicts and many other reasons. So I would say it's a very tough thing to do. And in order to change people's mindset, especially in ASOS sense, how the management feel about this business and how the team members feel about the business, is actually through data. So because as long as there's evidence, people will buy into the idea. So as long as I can put forth the rationale or the reasons using data to justify to them to get them to buy into the idea, that is actually how I would say it's one of the things that people should work towards too when changing people's mindset about this. So what we did on our end is that we did countless of research, be it a proxy research or market research that we did to understand actually what B2B customers want and also B2C customers want and what do they expect in the entire shopping experience. We use all this data, and also from in the time of our operations of our B2B2C model or B2B model, we use the data over time to justify to the team members and also the company that, hey, this is actually something that can work for us. And it actually drives incremental revenues, transactions for the entire business. So what I would say that is that data is king. As long as you have the data or the information to back your your decision here, it's I would say it can be done easily.
Okay, now awesome. And look, and you kind of segued quite nicely into what was going to be my next question is obviously outside purely just revenue or P&L indicators, is what other key metrics out of your data are you using to, you know, to demonstrate to the business that yeah, this was absolutely what we needed to do as a business, and it's what our customers are embracing.
Yeah, coincidentally, this was also the question in debate back in a few months that I had with my management, because back then we were having this debate about how do you prove what are the metrics that are what, how do you prove the entire concept, or how do you prove the entire results of the ROI of the concept? So, and then during that discussion, we had a heated debate of how we should be doing that. Then, but at that point of time, I was telling them, we should look past the revenue and P&L for this portion, because the reason, like I mentioned, why we started doing about on this journey into personalizing B2B buyers experience, yes, ultimately we are all after the same carrot, which is drive incremental revenues, incremental profits and stuff. But we also need to look at it from another way, that is actually simplifying and automating our process and enabling our staff or employees to free up their time to do more important things. Like mm-hmm. like I mentioned, for now instance, back then the sales rep was taking their time to go to companies to collect orders from companies to companies. Imagine all those time saved. So what I'm trying to say here is that we should not just look at revenue and profit or even loss itself. We should look at the time we invest in doing a particular business. If I can save more time for our business and have the team to do more important stuff, that is also one of the key metrics that companies or even management can relate to in this sense to see whether the success of such embarking onto B2C, providing B2C experience to B2B buyers can be done.
When we're talking about this pivot to B2B2C in general, has it changed how you've been looking at other aspects of the business? You know, and again, you know, on the B2C side, are they still delineated or are you able to almost try and have very similar messaging now?
Actually, the funny thing is that after embarking on this project or this journey, one thing we find that is that yes, there's the blur lines between B2B and B2C, but over time we do see that blur line actually converging in a sense that B2C buyers and B2B2C buyers are actually behaving the same. So the expectation of how we actually look at B2C right now can be directly applied to how we actually look at all people doing B2B business. So it makes, in other words, it makes a point that selling to either B2C customer or B2B2C customers or B2B customers, they are practically the same. And, I mean, you can employ the same approach. To summarize, basically, the expectations are starting to align until a point that any approach, whether it's a B2C or B2B, it works on both sides. But of course, there's still its differentiation, which I won't go into details. But again, like I say, it's just that the similarities are starting to emerge.
So even when we bring it down to the marketing materials that you have within the website, I mean, there's obviously different types, there's different kinds of content that a B2B customer would want versus a B2C, or are you seeing that is also slowly changing, and the content assets you would put out for either are equally applicable?
The marketing materials that we use for B2C customers are right now, I wouldn't say 100%, but it's sort of actually applicable to B2B customers, because that is the same thing that they want to see based on our experience in this field. So so I would say right now the marketing materials didn't differ too much, but it's actually the point of contact that or the point of contact that we have with the customer. So again, it boils down to the segmentation. So if the segmentation is partly about this agenda or this topic, we will communicate to them on that level. We don't really per se break down them into B2B or B2C customers. We actually break them down into interest, because regardless of B2B or B2C customers, when they want to buy an ASUS ZenBook, they will buy an ASUS ZenBook. So actually how we actually communicate with them on that. Yeah,
and look, and obviously we touched on just briefly before in terms of when obviously you were selling this internally to, you know, to executive management within ASUS to sort of go there. And you were talking a bit, you talked about some of the benefits that you'd seen outside of purely just profit, the profit and loss column. Has there been any benefit that's come out of this experience so far that's actually really surprised you?
Yeah, definitely. So when during the course of actually talking to them, one of the things that we got from our customers is that, because to the example that I mentioned about the employee purchase program, we always thought that, hey, if I customize a special discounted pricing for you, you'll definitely get the item from me. That was actually our understanding back then before we actually started. So, but once when we actually started this whole thing, it wasn't the case. Like I mentioned, because customers, yes, they do look at pricing and one of the key factors in designing it, but ultimately it's actually the ease of acquiring that thing. So we do have instances of B2B customers actually in the end shopping through our B2C portal. So and when we actually got to engage with them and ask them about this one, they were mentioning about things like just now I mentioned about fulfillment time and also the ease of getting their orders. So that in that particular example, this B2B customers was very eager to get his laptop. But because of how we actually do our B2B program, the fulfillment time is actually 3 to 5 days. But if you're buying as a B2C customers, you can get it almost the same day if you go collect it in store. So because of that sense of urgency, he paid the 100 over extras just to get it in store. So what I'm trying to say is that this thing that surprised us on top of just like what, like the profit and loss and stuff, is actually how customers want their shopping experience to be. One of the key things here that I mentioned is actually the fulfillment itself.
Coming through into the home straight for us now. So I guess one thing that we always try to do in these sessions is pop a couple of notes of caution or things to consider for people in your position, Eddie, if they're looking to do that pivot into B2B2C. What would you say has probably been the toughest aspect or the biggest hurdle that you're faced through this process as a word of warning to other budding young Eddie Tengs out there?
Yeah. First of all, it's the I would say that it's definitely going to be the internal struggle. Basically, it's getting your management to buy into the idea of pivoting to B2B2C. Because again, B2B2C, it's not a particularly new concept. I think it basically started at the beginning of time where people are selling stuff. So, but what the difference is right now is actually the experience or the way that you are conducting this business. So, as we know, in this digital age, we are conducting it in a digital method or digital way. So, in order to support for this, you definitely need some investment into setting up a system. Or a online system or e-commerce system to support this thing. So, and as we know, every sort of investment comes with expectations for management down to the ROI itself. So, which is why I say the most toughest aspect will be the struggle to persuade your management to buy into this idea, because they are spending money for you to do something else, and that's one thing. Then, of course, the next thing that they will look at is also like what I mentioned to just now about revenue and P&L. So you need to think of a way to persuade them, not just on the revenue and P&L level. Then of course, lastly, is the knowledge in carrying out this one, because everybody can do business. Everybody knows how to sell a product or an item. but it's not everybody has that the knowledge and skill set to do it in the digital space. So again, you need to ensure that your team or even your business or your company has that knowledge to carry this out, or at least have a trusted partner like SmartOSC to help you guide you into this field. So again, to have a trusted partner, whether it's an employee or an external member, it's definitely very important for you in addressing this.
And possibly this segues into that as well, is we touched on very briefly before the channel conflict, which obviously exists in any B2B environment. How have you managed the relationship with your resellers as you've moved more to this model? Had there been any real pushback worried about the changes that you're putting on harming their business, or was that all just you add that into that hurdle?
Definitely, because actually this is the again one of the toughest the main hurdles that we are facing I would say day to day, because just to give you more insights, in ACES Singapore we sell our products majority through our channel partners itself. So retailers like Harvey Norman and stuff, so they are one of the few partners that we work very closely with to sell our devices in Singapore. So again, on this one, definitely there's LGBT channel conflicts, because in order to get people to shop on your site, you don't just compete with them on the best shopping experience. Sometimes price do matter, like I mentioned. So because of such instances, your partners will start complaining and stuff. So what we do is actually don't think about it, just do it. So don't really think about a problem, because ultimately, no matter what you do or how you try to balance this thing, when it comes to two factors, being your own channel or and your own and your reseller channels, there bounds to be conflict. So it's either you have to, the businesses or the management basically have to, I would say, suck it up and just know what is it and do what's best for the business, because ultimately in our experience, you cannot please any side. If you already have the idea to sell on your own or sell directly through your own, this type of conflicts definitely will arise. So my advice is, don't care about it. Just fall back to your main objective of why you're doing this, and you'll be fine.
Okay. No. my next question was going to be if you were to distill that down based on your experience, if you're the three pieces of advice if you're trying to launch or transition to this, that'd be number one I'm taking would be just do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. And again, off that, so other than that, like if you had to narrow it down to someone, if they were going to try this journey tomorrow, what would be the absolute three, the three things to do over anything else as part of trying to transition to a B2B2C?
First of all, again, you need to make sure that your business is ready, because through our conversations, we mentioned that, one of key things is actually to make sure that your business is ready for that. So again, you need to make sure that you have all the tick boxes or the check boxes there before starting onto this. So it's not just, like I say, talks about whether you have the budget to do this, whether you have the resources to do this, the skill set to do this. You still need to look into the entire business mindset, like what we discussed earlier. Whether is it your team members or management, because those are the few key points or the check boxes that you have to manage when getting ready for this. Because again, you can't please everyone. So not down to the team members, your management and stuff, you need to make sure that you have all the resources ready to start providing to tackle on this new business. So that's one. Of course, you definitely need someone that you can trust. So like back to what I mentioned, back then when we were actually looking out for a partner to help us in this project, one of the key things is their expertise in this area. So so for SmartWise's instance, being a seasoned player in this industry, this is also why we actually shortlisted SmartWise to help us in with our digital business in Singapore. So again, to summarize, the first of all, to make sure that your company is ready, and also this trusted partner, like I say, to help you in this journey, because dabbling into this field is not just like a 1 year thing or 2 year thing. It's basically, it spells out the entire future of your company or your business. So it's very important that all these things falls into place before anything else. Yeah.
So yeah, look, I guess on that note, we might look at wrapping it up. There's been a lot of amazing information sort of come through from you, Eddie. So thank you very, very much for being so open and sharing about it. Use this opportunity here if there's something that you want to plug yourself, Eddie, whether it's your own LinkedIn account or website or some of the amazing deals that ASOS is going to be doing over the next few weeks. Here's your opportunity. Give it a go. Let people know how to get in touch.
Yeah, definitely. There's always tons of exciting things and programs coming out from ASOS. So just come to our ASOS website, be it in Singapore or anywhere. So yeah, just drop by our website and take a look at what's our offerings. Because sometimes you'll be surprised at the innovations that ASOS have for you, particularly. And of course, and also any special discounts that you can get from if you're buying from our own brand.com. So that's one thing. And of course, being an advocate in the digital space, I'm very happy to connect with people, like-minded people, to discuss about the things that we have just discussed. So do search for me anything on LinkedIn if you wish to connect, and definitely we can talk more then. Yeah.
Fantastic. And again, so thanks again to you, Eddie, to our wonderful audience out there. Thank you very much for listening. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening to. Rate and review the episode. Share with anyone who you think will find that interesting. For more on personalization and e-commerce in general, check out the SmartOSC website and keep an eye out for our B2B2C e-commerce white paper and a link to a blog post that we will also put up about this very discussion very soon. So on that end, we'll leave everyone to it. Have a wonderful day. Thank you very much.